You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, guys.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
People are hearing voices from all over. We've got three brothers sitting here. Introduce yourself to our listeners, and let's do it in order. So you guys can fight it out, youngest to oldest or oldest to youngest.
Well, Mike, hey, it's great to spend some time with you here. And my name's Jared Rhodes, and I'm a pharmacist by trade. Been in the pharmacy business for over 20 years. Actually, went through a residency and then joined a large chain close to 20 years ago, and worked my way up and worked in the corporate environment for many years and in various operations positions. And then, I'm joined my brothers here. So that's what's brought us here today, is working with my brothers, and really excited to one, be with you today, and also to be here with my brothers as we work together on a daily basis.
And Jared, before we go to Justin and Joel,
sure,
tell the listeners who you guys are. What is your company, and what do you do in a nutshell? And we'll obviously go deeper into that.
Sure. So we are Triavo Health, and Triavo Health is made up of the three brothers here, Jared, Justin, and Joel. And what we do is healthcare M&A consultancy. So we work with independent pharmacy owners across the United States, as well as large chains and private equity firms, and we help consult on the transaction side, whether it's a buy side transaction or a sell side transaction. So a lot of complexities today with in pharmacy and in these larger transactions, and we're there to help. To help make it a smooth process and work with, like I said, sellers and buyers. And that's what we do. We also do just general operations consulting as well to improve profitability. So, but that's something we do as well. So,
very cool.
We've been doing this for a while. Yeah.
All right. So, who's next out of you guys? Who's the next step down?
I am the next one in line. My name is Justin Rhodes. I appreciate you having me on, Mike. I've been in pharmacy for about 20 years as well. Started as a pharmacy technician at Walgreens and went on to pharmacy school and worked retail for a little while. Then Joel and I bought our first pharmacy back in 2009. We ended up owning four pharmacies. We sold off most of them, grew them up, sold them off, and got into this business.
All right. So left then is Joel. Is that all we've got for the family then?
Yeah, there's two more brothers that we have. There's five boys, and Jared is the oldest. I'm the youngest. The two that are not with us today are actually they're business partners as well in a software development company here in Tucson. So to give you kind of a brief background, I'm one of the few that has not historically been in pharmacy. I started in real estate back 17 years ago or so. I started in sales for a home builder. And then, as Justin mentioned, we had an opportunity to buy one of our friend's pharmacies. He was looking to retire, and it was kind of at the cusp of, the real estate market in 2008. And so we had an opportunity to buy his pharmacy, and we took that opportunity. And 2009, I think January 9th of 2009 was the day we closed. From that point previous, I had never really stepped foot in a pharmacy before. Hmm. And then after January 9th, it was kind of we ate, slept, and breathed pharmacy. And it's kind of been that way ever since. So it's been an awesome process.
Well, nice to meet you guys. Thanks for being on the program here. Is it a coincidence that two of you, at least two, I take it the other two are not in pharmacy at all by trade?
No, they are not. Although one of our brothers is married to a pharmacist.
Oh, is that
right? Who actually used to be one of our employees. So it's really
wow. Yeah. So where did the pharmacy get started in the family? Was it because of older brother Jared going to school that Justin goes, or
that?
But
that was,
not a father or anything.
No, no fathers, no family members. I think that my mom was a nurse. Our mom was a nurse. Our great grandma was in healthcare. She worked in the Red Cross, and so healthcare has always been in our blood. But pharmacy was something Jared went into, and I just followed in his shoes.
Some lady asked me, she said, why'd you go into pharmacy? And I said, well, because my dad was in it. And it's like, and he never forced me into it because I was going to do other things too. But she said, well, really, I think she was trying to get at, like, what good did I have in my heart for the world that I was going to conquer with pharmacy? And I'm like, nothing, you know?
Sure.
I saw my dad do it, so I know he could do it. I saw the income he made, and I'm like, I can if my old man can do it, I can do it. But quite often, you know, we just end up in things that that the road seems a little bit more clear. Are you guys all together in the same area now, or are you spread out across the country as we speak?
So we're spread out. So Justin and Joel are based out of Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
And I am based out of Lake Forest, Illinois. So just north of Chicago, about 30 miles.
Yeah.
Which works out pretty well because we do work and we have an extended team that works lives in Wisconsin and also more in Arizona. And it works out well because we work with pharmacists all over the United States. So we have
Good
Midwest, Eastern coverage with myself and then Western coverage with Justin and Joel. And it logistically, it works out really well.
You guys can probably get more done with three of you talking on the phone instead of being together. Because when you're together, you say, let's go out for lunch or let's, you know, let's fix this or something. You know what
lunch
I mean?
It's like, generous.
It's like when I got to get stuff done in the pharmacy, I get it all done from home, like 3 miles away.
Exactly.
And I'll go in strictly to say hello and kiss babies and, you know, shake hands and that kind
Slaps
of stuff.
Backs.
But,
yep.
Yeah. But so when you guys went from 2009 to 2014, was that, and Jared, you weren't part of that.
No.
Did you guys have this goal of around 2014, or was there an impetus to sell earlier and then you were going to do this? Or it seems like a pretty quick turnaround. Was that your plan from the start?
No, it was not at all. When we first bought our pharmacy in 2008, then they passed Obamacare shortly after that. And as you know, obviously you're a pharmacy owner yourself. You kind of saw what that did to the market. You know, we saw reimbursement constrict and just the entire consolidation of the pharmacy field. So 2009, we went in and our first pharmacy that we bought at that time, we didn't know better, but it specialized in pain management, infertility, and long-term care assisted living. And so when Justin and I bought the pharmacy and, you know, after about 6 months, 8 months, we knew that pain management was an area we did not want to be in at all.
Yeah. Right.
Because it's just at that time, we just didn't like it. I mean, it wasn't safe. It wasn't good. We didn't like it. We just, it wasn't our deal. So, we had an opportunity in late 2010 to sell off that aspect and our specialty infertility aspect of our pharmacy. And during that time, we were actually in expansion mode. We went and bought, we went and secured a lease for a new building out into a active adult community of about 10,000 people called Saddlebrook. And we built Saddlebrook Drug. And so we were expanding at the time. And when Walgreens came to us and said, hey, we're interested in looking at this aspect of your business, your pain management and your infertility, we quickly obliged to sell it to them.
And that was what year?
That was 2010. So we closed 2009 was when we bought our pharmacy. We were in that current location for about 22 months. And it was October 30th of 2010 is when we sold our retail portion off to Walgreens. And in that time, we had built up quite a bit of long-term care business as well. That was kind of a business we did want to be in because it was a little more predictive and we enjoyed it. Justin's a very, very, very good operations guy. So we would love to kind of try to make something a little bit more efficient than when we bought it. And so that happened. We built up that business. And so when we closed, we sold off our retail portion of Walgreens. We moved our entire operation up to our new pharmacy that we were going to be opening up to the public that January.
How many retail operations did you condense then and sell off basically?
So we at that time in 2010, we just sold off the retail portion of our single pharmacy because we only owned one pharmacy at that time and we were building another.
Gotcha.
And our plan was to open up our new pharmacy in January of 2011. And so it was kind of funny because the day we closed with Walgreens, we got our certificate of occupancy to move into our new pharmacy and run everything out of our new pharmacy. So we literally, I'll never forget it. It was Friday we closed with Walgreens and we sold all of our inventory. We cleaned out our pharmacy, cleaned out everything, went up to our new building, had to order all new inventory, and we started up fresh on Monday.
Really?
And,
wow.
And that was an interesting process because
we didn't even have phone service. We were running the whole thing off of a phone card, everything. All of our switching was going out through a phone card. It was classic.
It was fun, though.
Jared's just like sitting back thousands of miles away kind of laughing at you guys? Or why wasn't...
Well,
now, Jared, I know you were a bigwig in your operation at the chain, but did you ever contemplate, like, maybe these guys never asked you, but did you ever contemplate joining these two, or?
You know, not back then. I was very happy with my career path and what I was doing. And, back then, not so much, we talked, like, we've always been close and we would talk on a daily basis and just in terms of, how things are going. I was very connected, I would say, to both of them, but it never really crossed my mind. It would require me to move. I've moved all over with Walgreens and I was not living in Tucson at the time. I was actually living in Southern California and then Chicago. Gotcha. So that was part of it as well.
Gotcha. So then you guys sell the retail, you go and you open up on Monday, but is it a retail again?
Yeah. So we opened up inside of our retail pharmacy that was going to be opening up to the public in January of the next year, right? So this was end of October 2010. We were opening up January 4th of 2011. So we at that time basically took all of our assisted living and LTC business up there. We probably had, 500-600 beds that we were servicing.
And you brought that into a retail operation because I had enough room and stuff?
Correct. We brought it into a retail operation. And then so that business continued to grow. When we opened up our actual retail pharmacy, it just so happened there was another suite right next to us because they built that building for us. If we were to sign a 5-year lease, they build the building for us and they built two suites. One was for our retail pharmacy and one was a next door blank shell. And so we negotiated a deal where we would, have the entire building. So we kind of shifted off our workflow because, as you know, retail pharmacy and long-term care, they're totally different workflows if you've done them before. And so we kind of had to shift. We almost had two different pharmacies going on under the same operation. And Justin,
yeah, I imagine.
Justin had to wear a bunch of hats because he was one pharmacist in doing two completely different businesses in almost two different buildings with a connecting door. And he was the only pharmacist that we had at the time. So it was kind of an incredible process. And
yeah, I've always wanted more than one pharmacy so that I could hide between the two of them and nobody would know where the hell I was.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Justin, if that was your goal, that was a bad move.
No.
Having them next door.
Yeah, I could hide in about an 8-inch section between the two places.
Everybody always knew where I was at. So all right, so you're doing the double duty and you got this going. Where does that go then?
So we continued to build out. We set up at that point. We knew we kind of had two different operations going on under the same roof. And so we really, kind of pointed our focus. We hired a pharmacist to run the retail portion. Great guy. We hired him to back into the retail portion. And then Justin focused solely on the assisted living and LTC. So we it just so happens, it's kind of crazy how things work. Just so happens we met a gentleman who was a computer program, a software developer who was absolutely incredible, one of the most brilliant human beings on earth. So we did some really, really cool stuff. And Justin can kind of, I'm sure, delve a little bit deeper into it. But we did a lot of stuff that was cutting edge at that time from 2011, 2012, doing our own, delivery software, connecting our faxes to be able to do digital faxing and barcoding the faxes. There's just a lot of different stuff that we did.
For people listening now, they think, oh, that stuff's been around forever. But you look back at Amazon or whatever, and you say, geez, I only bought like two packages that year from Amazon, and now it's like $600 or something, and you just forget yep. that things haven't yeah. been around forever.
If your wife is anything like mine, you'll get three packages yeah. a day every day.
Yeah. I know.
We're all the same boat on that one, I think. Yeah.
So we expanded at that point, and then we realized that our assisted living was getting too big to be in that area that we were in. So we negotiated, we signed a lease on a much larger space, moved the assisted living over, and then we mm-hmm. decided to open up another retail pharmacy. And so from basically 2011 to late 2012, it was full speed ahead. We were growing very leaps and bounds on both the retail side and the assisted living and LTC side. And then back early 2013, our computer programmer, mm-hmm. who was really an integral part of our business. I mean, he wasn't just a programmer.
Sure.
He was somebody who strategized with us globally on our business, not just on that aspect of it. And he was an incredible guy, and he was very wise. And so he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in February of 2013 and passed away in May of 2013. So it was very quick. And then once that happened, it was just kind of it took the zeal out of it at some level for us, right, on the assisted living side. So we continued to grow. But out of the blue, we got a call from Guardian Pharmacy in probably July of 2013. It's just, again, kind of crazy how things work. But July of 2013, we got a call from Guardian Pharmacy, and they wanted to join forces. And they ended up purchasing us, and we closed in September of 2013 on that store. On our long-term care business. So we sold that, and then we went basically from three stores to one store very quickly.
Jeez.
That's what happened. And then 2014, to be very honest with you, we had a person come in with a letter from OptumRx,
yeah.
which was that time Prescription Solutions. And they said, hey, we need to force your they're forcing us the mail order. I can only fill my scripts from you for 90 days. And Justin and I talked about it. We just said, you know what? Let's just hold off for a bit until the pharmacy market kind of shakes itself out. And we ended up selling our Saddlebrook drug location and sold ourselves out of a job.
So a customer came in with the letter, and that was kind of a instigator to kind of be thinking about what's happening.
Yep.
It was eye-opening because we thought, you know, up until about 10 years ago, having a 65 and older population with 10,000 people was considered a gold mine in pharmacy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that gold mine turned into a, you know, giant noose around our neck, because the next thing you know, you've got 80% of the people all on one insurance, and they're being forced to mail order. There wasn't a whole lot we could do then.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking to the masses here of that, because everybody's in the same, you know, the same position. Boy, I'm sorry to hear about your partner passing. That was really quick.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it was. I mean, he wasn't young. He wasn't old, but he wasn't young either. It was tough because he was like a family member to us very quickly, actually. I mean, we didn't meet the guy until 2011.
Right.
And so we meet him in 2011, and he passes away early 2013. But in that time, we did just some awesome, awesome stuff. And it was a very exciting time.
Did that shake you up? If he would have, instead of passing away, if he were to have, you know, moved or been incapacitated in that regard, but still been a lively person and so on, would that have changed your direction at all? Or without him, was it emotional and functional? Or without him, whether it was a happy ending or a sad ending like it was, would that have changed anything? I'm not even sure of that question, but how much of it was?
Yeah, no, I think I, yeah, Justin, you can attest.
Yeah, I would say, you know, a huge part of it, because I was kind of backup IT at the mm-hmm. time, and a huge part of it was functional. A huge part of it was emotional. Like Joel said, we kind of lost the zeal for our pharmacy. We lost it. Kind of, it wasn't as exciting going in. I think had James stayed alive, Joel and I'd both be dead of a heart attack by now. So
because of the business, how it was moving and shaking.
Yeah,
and
how
things.
Stressful it is. Absolutely.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't sleep. You're unhealthy. You're constantly thinking about how to grow your business. And as you know, pharmacy is really cash intensive. I mean, you grow your business on the LTC side.
Yeah.
You grow it by 20%. That's a lot of money. If you're a $5 million company,
right,
you grow it by $1 million, that means you got another $85,000 a month that's going out and you're not getting paid for that for another 90 days.
Yeah, right.
And so that process takes a toll on you when you're a small business and you don't have just, you know, a drastic amount of, and at
capital.
That time, mm-hmm, it was right after recession. So it's really difficult to get a business line of credit at all at that time. I mean, it was nigh upon impossible to do that.
Yeah. People forget about the capital intensiveness of it because, you know, I mean, you might have something that costs $500 and you're making, you know, $5 on a sale of something. That means you got to make 100 of those sales just to, you know, just to get that on the shelf and so on. So it's
you're right.
It's really intensive. You guys finally sell. This letter comes in. You see the writing on the wall and you finally sell out. Was it, hey, Justin, nice working with you. Goodbye. And Joel, nice working. I mean, what did you, I'm joking, but what did you think your next step was? Were you already planning that?
No. What happened was we sold and we took the guy who bought us from Walgreens out to dinner in Chicago, actually with Jared. Jared, it was me, Jared, Sean, and Justin.
Right.
And we went out. That was in November, early December, maybe late November, early December of 2014. And we were having dinner, and he said, "You know what? You guys should you should look at starting a consulting company." And that's where it all started.
Hmm.
So we came back after that, and I had an offer to go back and work for site sales, which I thought about taking, but we just what it wasn't. I didn't want to go and work for somebody else at all.
Yeah, right.
And neither did Justin. So we just said, hey, let's give it a whirl. And so we literally January 3rd or something of 2015, we started making calls and we just started cold calling.
And you knew your customer base was already going to be the merger acquisition sales kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, our call was very pointed at, hey, are you interested in selling? If you're interested in selling, look, I can help you out. Because at that time, we've gone through multiple acquisitions by ourselves. And to be frank, I wish I would have used somebody like us.
Right.
Because there's so much we didn't know. However, given the fact that we didn't, we learned a lot.
Yeah, you learned it quicker. You learned it more quickly.
A ton. Yeah, we learned a ton about it. But we had done it from the, you know, from the corporate side with Walgreens to, at that time, Guardian wasn't nearly as big. I mean, they were big, but they weren't nearly as big as what they are now. And so it was a two very, very different process.
And your final sale was to Walgreens of your final store?
Correct. Yeah. So we sold two to Walgreens, one to Guardian. And then one we had to shut down because we had a non-compete. It was just a kind of a complicated lease situation that was in our pharmacy that we sold to Guardian. So,
you know, it's amazing. I had years ago, I would flip flop between wanting to, you know, always pricing myself in the market and wanting to, some weeks I'd wake up and say I was going to sell and some weeks I'd wake up and say I was going to buy. But I remember someone told me, mm-hmm, they said, just go to people in town and just tell them that you'd be interested in buying. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. It can be, you know, that they might take it wrong or this or that. But then like within 3 or 4 years, the four people that somebody said go to had sold. So you never know what's on people's minds, regardless of their age or income or how much they invested.
Right.
You just don't have a clue what's, mm-hmm, on their mind. All right, so then you guys start this going. Then you bring along this other dude at some point.
Yeah. Just random dude.
Just random
right?
dude. Died. So how does so what happens there with you start going, you start making the calls. I'm always excited about the first dollar, you know. What was your first like collection that you made from when you started the phone call? When did you say, "Oh, this could work?"
Yeah, so we all, Justin and I always talk about this because it's interesting as your business, as our business has grown and the size of our deals have grown, it's kind of easy to forget where you came
right.
from. I'll never forget the first deal I had was a gentleman out in New Mexico in Albuquerque. And I worked on this guy tirelessly and he ended up, you know, listing the pharmacy with us and we sold it. And Justin and I drove because at that time we just were like, we started this new business. We're like, all right, we're going to be frugal. And we drove from here to Albuquerque and, you know, we went and collected, I think it was $7,100 or something, right, Justin?
$7,100.
And I was beaming from ear to ear because at that point it wasn't the money.
Yeah.
Because we had just sold our pharmacies. It wasn't the money. It was the proof of concept.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And when it worked, it was a pretty incredible feeling.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
It was awesome.
Once in a while, I get on YouTube and for some reason I watch – I don't do any sales really. You know, I mean, in the pharmacy, it's all like passive sales sort of as people come in.
Sure.
Last week, I got on this kick of watching these two sales guys. One is Grant Cardone, and then the other guy was like this Jared, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street, and they're having this argument about who's the better salesperson or something like that. So I started watching some of that, and they were doing some stuff on cold calls. And again, I don't do cold calls, but I found it interesting that that can be so depressing, I guess, that every morning they start off role playing, like getting slammed in their face for like 20 minutes before the day starts so that they get their jitters out with each other. And I imagine with pharmacies, cold calling them has got to be one of the worst things because they've got, first of all, they don't have time. And secondly, they've got a million excuses that are probably valid excuses why they say, I can't talk now and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So being that you started calling, how do you now and how then did you get past that?
I think, especially with pharmacists, they like a knowledge base, right? So if you can talk to somebody... I did exactly what you were talking about. I went on to YouTube because at that point I'd been in sales for a long time, but I never cold called. That's not something
I
did.
There's a difference.
And so I went on YouTube and I found out, I said, I literally YouTubed cold call techniques and I found a couple that were good. But what I found was when you start talking to people about the industry, like we are to you right now, I mean, we can sit here and talk all day long about DIR fees. We can talk about reimbursement decreasing. We can talk about the consolidation of healthcare, what's going to happen if it goes single payer. We can talk about a lot of different things. And we could probably chunk up hours and hours and hours talking about the business that we've all been in for a long time. And so what I found was just talking to people and having them understand that, number one, we're not brokers selling ice cream shops. We're pharmacy professionals, and this is what we do. And our goal is to help you through a very difficult process if it's on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, if you don't want to sell, not a problem. It's great having a conversation with you. You know, it's good having a conversation with you. If you do want to sell, you really need to take a look at you utilizing us because, again, I've sat where they have sat.
Right.
You know, I know what the difficulties are with cash flow and all of that. We understand it. Where, you know, if that's why a typical business broker, they don't know what a DIR fee is. They
Sure.
don't know what, you know, PBMs are and why it's an issue when Express Scripts cuts off compounding in 2016. You know,
yeah.
They don't get, there's not, that's not a huge issue to them.
I imagine in that there's a lot of emotions stored up. Do you guys ever get people mm-hmm. that are just get pissed off at you because you even mentioned, you know, like number one, selling and number two, possibly selling to a chain? You guys must get earfuls and people like kind of the kick the dog syndrome where they're taking out their frustration they've felt the last 12 years onto you guys.
Yeah, it happens.
I would say it happens, but I'd also say what we do see is we have a group of buyers. I mean, we've got hundreds of buyers, and we don't just pitch. We're not like this one-trick pony who says, hey, I know Walgreens, and therefore I'm going to pitch you to Walgreens, or I know CVS, therefore I'm going to pitch you to CVS. You know, our goal is to say, we want this to go how you want it to go. So if you want to go only independent, we can do that, but we're going to bring you offers from the chains, independents, and let you make the decision as a seller. And that usually diffuses it quite a bit, but you do get people who are pissed off and people want to kick in and but at the end of the day, you know, you can't take it personal, because I've been there and I've been pissed off and I've wanted to kick somebody when I was a pharmacist, and you got an insurance company on one phone, a doctor on the other, and your technician just called in sick. So I
All right. So then you guys, so then in 2015, you're doing this, and now it's 2019. Were there any, was it kind of a, just a growth, any real setbacks? And then how did we still haven't admitted to getting Jared involved here. So we still, even though it might be a painful story, guys, we got to talk about it.
It's painful. We got to hit it.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it was what happened was we used to have a different name. We basically carried over our corporate name from when we owned our pharmacies. And yeah, I mean, were there setbacks? Sure, there definitely were setbacks. But as a whole, we grew every year a decent amount. The first year, we hardly did any deals. And the deals we did do were fairly small. Mm-hmm. But it was, again, proof of concept. So over the last 3.5 years, we grew the business. And I think, you know, at that time, whenever you grow a business, like in, whether it's pharmacy or this or anything else, it's kind of taking it from the, you know, in the trenches, you're just pressing as hard as you can to being able to get to a position where you can actually strategize. And I think that's kind of where Jared, you know, he came in. The conversation started 2018, probably June, July of 2018 is when the conversation started, you know, because we were pressing really hard. Justin and I were pressing really hard. I always tell people, I called so many people, my tongue fell off, you know, and it's just that it's just, it, and so once we were getting up to the plane of having some systems or at least needing some systems and having that growth, we started talking to Jared. Jared was, you know, interested in potentially coming on. And then December of 2018 is when you made the decision. We flew out. We happened to be going out to Florida for a closing, and we did a stay over in Chicago and met with Jared, and he said, hey guys, let's talk about doing this. Would you want to join forces? And so given the fact he had his, you know, corporate experience with the systems that he's done and kind of building out a team, he's got a lot, you know, a lot of that experience that he brings to the table that we don't have. So we said, hey, let's do it. So we made the decision in December and came on January 15th. And then January 17th, my name changed. I got demoted, and it was, you know, everything's good.
It happened quickly, right? Yeah.
That was awesome.
Your title changed from what to what then, Joel, officially?
I was the president and CEO, and now I'm the janitor.
Congratulations.
Joking. No, I'm just joking.
I'm assuming the payment's pretty equal, and so you might as well take the one with the lowest responsibility.
In all seriousness, so we just made a decision. We're partners. Everybody brings something different to the table, and so we just said, hey, this is not, it's not something where we're going to have a CEO. So we're taking more of the kind of private equity space approach, and we're partners, and that's, you know, kind of how we do it.
Jared, was that the only impetus for you leaving your time at the chain at that point? If these guys weren't doing their thing, would you still be where you were, or was there something that was shaking up that you wanted to change and so on, whether it was corporate or personal or whatever?
Sure. No, that's a great question. I think there were a variety of things going on, but it really came down to, you know, I was at a point in my career where I needed to make a decision either to stay. I've been with Walgreens for 19 years, so it was a long time. And I either need to say, hey, I'm going to stay and retire with Walgreens, or if I'm going to make a move, I need to do it now. So I was looking at different opportunities. I love my work at Walgreens, a lot of great people, really enjoyed my time there. But I think I came to the point where, you know, I'm interested in exploring other options. And then, you know, when we had that discussion, and one, being able to work with these guys, are both very talented guys, a lot of experience, to get to work with your brothers is a huge blessing. And two, to get to make decisions. I mean, so we make a decision. So we changed when I joined the organization in January, it was a different brand. It was Diversified Pharmacy Solutions. And literally within a week or two, we rebranded. We built a new website. There was a lot of things that we did in a very short period of time. And you can really do that when you have your own company and you work with individuals like Justin and Joel that are able to make things happen very quickly.
Yeah. Jared, for our listeners, just internally, I'm aware of some of the things that you mean when you say you had to make a choice. But for the listeners, what did that mean for you of saying you had to stay or you had to move? I've got a brother and he runs a consulting business, and his thing is like, I got to try to look as good as some of these young guys do, you know, with keeping in shape.
Sure.
Wanting to maybe start over and have enough longevity so your new customers trust that you're going to be around and all that kind of stuff. What were things on your mind when you say that I needed to start sooner than later?
Sure. Well, you know, I think it comes down to, I mean, a lot of that is, I think, where you're at in your career. So you think about when you're going to retire and where you're at. So I'm the oldest of five boys. So I'm older than both of Justin and Joel. And I wanted to make sure I had a long runway in a different organization that I'd be joining. So if I waited another 10 years, you're approaching that time when you would be probably retiring, or another 15 years, I'd definitely be approaching that time. So I wanted to have enough time to really make an impact on whatever organization I joined.
You may not be as attractive to a company anymore if they know they only have 3 or 4 years left of you or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that definitely played into it. So there comes that sweet point where you're like, hey, this is the time to make a change. And the fact, you know, and there was a lot of pluses to working with Justin. I wish just wouldn't have taken anything. It took something special. And I believe, you know, getting to work with my brothers was something very special. And I definitely have not looked back at all. It's been a great, great decision.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And, you know, I know they mentioned before just joining forces, you know, the story, and you look at the experience that we have individual pharmacy, you know, independent owners that Justin and Joel had. We had the buy, you know, I worked in the corporate side and I was on the buying side of those transactions and understanding the strategy and structure. You know, when you combine the forces, not just three brothers that work well together, but three brothers that have very different skills, but together we bring, you know, a differentiated experience that anybody has out there. So I think that's what was compelling to me and exciting. Like, boy, nobody else has this. Nobody else has a team with corporate experience, with independent pharmacy owners, with multiple pharmacists that understands the business inside and out, that can really sympathize and work with independent pharmacy owners. And going back to your early point, it is an emotional decision. You know, when we reached out to these guys, they may not be wanting to then, but even going through the whole process, we understand the emotions involved. So I think that's, we're able to connect with our sellers unlike anybody else.
What words of wisdom would you give to a pharmacy or a pharmacist that's going to sell? In other words, like, all the technical stuff takes place and, you know, all the signatures, and what do the people finally say? You know, what wisdom do you give to them if they need it?
I think part of it is, you know, it is going back to, it is an emotional decision. This is something, and Mike, you know this, you've been in the pharmacy business, your family's, you know, your father and grandfather has. So when we are working with a seller, it's emotional. Maybe they've been open for 100 years or 50 years, and it may not necessarily be another independent that's buying them and continuing the brand.
Right.
So, but it comes down to, it's a business decision. At the end of the day, you've got to do what's best for you and your family moving forward. And when you look at it from that standpoint, and they're selling and they're at that point, they want to retire. They've got to make the decision that's best for them. Or if it's earlier on, they want to try something different. And I think that's it. You've got to think about yourself, your family, consider this transaction and selling, because it is, like I said, a deeply emotional decision in many cases.
Yeah, that's good. You do have to think about yourself, because I know, mm-hmm. So many employees, and I've done the same thing where you're gone and you think you might stay in contact or something, but you don't. The only
big
contact people have is money, and they have to. There's just too much to focus on in the world, and so
sure.
People get they get over it, quickly enough. You have to do what's good for yourself, and that's not always mm-hmm. selfish, really. Because the good book will say, well, don't be selfish and all that stuff. But sometimes you've got to be selfish enough to enjoy what you're doing and make good decisions for yourself, and then you blossom, and then everybody else sees you blossoming, and so on. And mm-hmm. the world doesn't mm-hmm. really need more martyrs. There's plenty of natural pain and malevolence out there. It doesn't need
you don't need to
search for it,
Right, exactly.
No, and one thing I would say, if someone's interested in selling their pharmacy, is to get to know your business now. You wouldn't believe how many pharmacists we talk to, and they don't realize they're losing $50,000 or $100,000 a year, and they're wondering why they're back on their payments. And I would say, get to know your business now. Figure out kind of where you're profitable, where you're not profitable, and start thinking about the decisions you're going to have to make, whether you're going to be selling it or keeping
yeah.
it. Because like you say, there's enough pain in this world that you shouldn't be selling a $10,000 prescription for a $1,000 loss.
Yeah, right.
And feeling that obligated to that patient
yeah.
because that, we feel, as pharmacists, we feel very obligated to our patients.
Right.
But I always say it's kind of funny. The same patients that you feel so guilty about when you go to close your pharmacy are the first ones who are going to bring you the letter saying, hey, I can get it for 50 cents cheaper down the road.
I know. That's so true. Out of the 100 that say it, there still is the one employee that brings you cookies on your birthday or something, but the 99, good intentions, but I don't blame anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're right. They're going to come. They're the first one that comes, with the letter or whatever. Human nature, I mm-hmm. guess. How about you, Joel? Any mm-hmm. what wisdom would you give?
Everybody's going to have the same comment, and that is, I'm not looking to sell. And that's what everybody says. But if somebody is ready to sell, having realistic expectations about worth, guys, if somebody's coming in telling you that your standard retail pharmacy that has gross profit of between 18 and 20% and net profitability between 3 and 5%. If they're coming in here and saying that an independent is willing to pay 6, 7, 8 time multiples, they're not.
Yeah, right.
So just understand that there's realism involved with what's going on right now, where the market is with independent versus where chains are. And that's something that we do. We do valuations for pharmacies so that they can get a good realistic look at where their pharmacy is.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the on a scale. If you looked at 100 things in life that people would be selling, pharmacies have to be at the top of that list of what people think the worth is versus the actual worth.
My gosh.
Because you've got,
yeah,
mm-hmm. and I mean, all the reasons all everybody knows about who's listening. I mean, you just got all kinds of emotions mm-hmm. tied up in it, and mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and there are cases, like a good example. I mean, there's in a couple different ways that you do valuations, there are situations where if a pharmacy is doing 50,000 prescriptions a year, all three valuation methodologies will come out with something very, very similar.
Sure.
But there are instances where if a pharmacy is doing 25,000 scripts a year, they're not making money. Their revenue is not that much, but maybe their pharmacy is worth a decent amount to a chain that's a quarter mile down the road.
Yeah.
So, everything is not always based on EBITDA. Everything's not always based on price per prescription, and everything's not always based on a percentage of revenue. It really depends on what your pharmacy is. So if it's something that you do have a question about, feel free to give us a call, and we'd be happy to, mm-hmm. to talk with you and kind of go through that process with you.
Yeah, once in a while there's mm-hmm. some once in a great while there's some potential that would throw the price up, but most of those come out in the mix. But once in a great while there's maybe something that, you know, the town's taking sure. off or something like that. But they're not sure. they're not as sure. frequent as people wanna think nope. they are. You know, the typical thought is, all right, someone wants to buy or sell, and you sell it and they buy it. Do you have any times where things get kind of funky with have you had any horror stories of family trusts wanting to do something, or do they go smooth enough? I was afraid to ask it because I wasn't sure you'd have a story, but I thought there's got to be some real crap that you guys have had to go through with that. I mean, you get paid for it, but...
Not unless it closes.
Yeah, and those may not.
That's the thing. The ones that go south, you don't get paid for.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a, you know, here's the thing, and this is one of the things that I'll tell this to our sales, to our team members, our salespeople, is it, you mentioned cold calls can be very disheartening. Mm-hmm. What also can be very disheartening is when you take somebody through a process. You hold their hand, you get a deal together, and that deal falls out for some reason. But Justin and I got a deal. It's a very large specialty pharmacy out in Southern Cal, and we went through the ringer on this guy. Went through the ringer, and we got a deal together, and everything was going well. But then the seller got a little squirrely, and then the buyer got a little squirrely, and I sent an email. That's why you got to watch when you email, to watch what your cadence is in your email and really read it before you send it. Because I sent an email that in my mind didn't seem like a bad thing. But I quickly got a response from my seller that said, please do not ever speak to me again.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, okay. But then, so I obliged, and, he said, cancel the deal and never speak to him again. So I said, okay, that's fine. And a year later, I get a phone call. It was on Thanksgiving Day. I get a phone call and he says, hey, Joel, this is so-and-so. Do you want to list my pharmacy again? I'm like, really? And the funny, and so I went from not speaking to me ever again to, do you want to list my pharmacy, to us selling to the same purchaser that was on the docket 18 months early.
Isn't that something?
It was unbelievable. Yeah. And so and everybody's happy, and that the buyer has just exploded the business, and the seller's happy, and now it's like, you know, he sends me Christmas cards. And so that kind of stuff happens, and it's good to be able to tell your staff, hey, don't get disheartened, because
yeah, you get that with customers too. They're never going to be back, and this mm-hmm. and that. Oh, yeah. And it's like, right. All of a sudden, they're back with smiles on their faces, and it's like,
yeah,
maybe they were triggered. They're not in their reality, and they're saying stuff they don't even recall they said. They probably never brought up the past of that. You know, you never found out why he didn't want to talk to you.
No, I think he didn't like my email. It was direct. It wasn't mean. It was direct. And yeah, sometimes you got to do that. But right. Frankly, the email was warranted.
It ended up working.
It did work. I mean, the thing, again, what happens is you have a lot of these, our goal is to, again, set people's expectations and exceed people's expectations, right? Yeah. And you have a lot of other entities out there that will say a lot of things.
Yeah.
They'll say, hey, I'll get you this, I'll get you this, I'll get you this. That was exactly what happened. I mean, he had a lot of people that were saying, oh, I'll sell your pharmacy for this. I'll sell it for this. I'll sell it for this. And guess what? 18 months later, nobody had sold their pharmacy. A lot of people had come and looked and lowballed and done this and done that. And he didn't get a sale. So he comes back to me. We end up making a deal and selling a store.
About everything you say can be all the listeners can put into their daily life. It's the customers that come in and say, well, I can get this $100 item that you have, I can get it for $80 down the road. And you're like, all right, well, why didn't you get it? It's like, well, they don't have it. It's like,
yeah,
you
sure.
can't get, right. you can't get it for $80 then. I assume you're enjoying life, you're enjoying what you're doing. Does this then carry on then for 10 years, growing this? Do you have any other, not that you should, do you have any other urges in you to say, after so long, we're going to do this? And I'm not saying you should change course if the course is going well,
yeah.
But do you have any of those ideas or thoughts?
Jared has always wanted to open up a petting zoo.
Joel, that was pretty classic. Yeah. One of these years, Joel. One of these years.
One of these years. Petting zoo, here we go.
Is that true?
No. There's nothing wrong with a petting zoo, by the way. But so, Mike, regarding your question, so Triavo Health will continue to grow in other ways. So right now we are focused on pharmacy, but I can tell you that we're working on a variety of other things that will continue to be part of the Triavo brand. And that's part of the reason why we did some branding changes, mm-hmm. because we want to make sure we have that flexibility to expand in other areas and do other things. So I can tell you, we always have great ideas. Justin has great ideas, and we have several things in the docket that we'd like to pursue in the future. So definitely want to do this to the best of our ability, better than anybody else. We want to build that brand, but in the meantime, setting our sights to make sure we're diversified and working in a variety of other areas. So you'll see that in the future.
And you're learning the ropes now of the procedures you put together, and you could,
absolutely,
you know, put that over into other industries too.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys personally, what do you least like about your work day? Like, you got to do the paperwork or the travel or the dealing with whatever. Is there anything that you don't enjoy?
I get tired of staring at spreadsheets all day. You know, it starts going sideways after a little while.
Yeah, right.
Getting ugly data is a rough thing to do, trying to unwind something that's been given to you poorly.
And you might get that like in any different way, right? It could even be like paper and pencil, but sometimes it's a bad QuickBook file or something like that.
Bad QuickBook file, or someone, you know, every time we go to list the pharmacy, we have a questionnaire. We say how many prescriptions you do in a week, and they fill that out. And then finally you get the reports and nothing matches up. And you say, is this the same pharmacy that we have a questionnaire for? Because nothing looks right. And so trying to get that rectified.
You think they're guessing, or are they picking their best week in history, or what?
No, I don't think there's anything malicious about it. I think what it comes down to, you know, you've worked as a pharmacist, Mike. If someone would ask you how many prescriptions it fills, a lot of times it's like, well, I filled 500 on a Monday after a holiday.
Yeah, right.
So you say, I fill 500 a day. Yeah. Well, that's not 500 a day. That's not 3,500 a week.
No.
That's 500 a day one time after a major holiday.
But that's what you tell your wife, at least, when you come home.
Exactly. We all have
to impress the wife.
Yeah, all the tricks.
We have all the tricks. So.
Not just impress them, Jared. I mean, it's impress, but it's also feed up after dinner, not helping with the dishes and those kind of things.
Exactly.
Not that I would do that.
No.
See, my wife's also a pharmacist, so I can only get so far on some of this. You know?
So she knows.
She knows. Yeah, exactly.
She knows. How about you, Joel? Yeah. And anything that you'd prefer not to do during the week?
You mentioned paperwork. I'm not a paperwork person. It's not something I like. I like to work with people.
Oh, you're with people
I work with people. I like to be at the kind of front end of working with people, you know, that emotionally working with them, making sure, talking them through deals, that kind of stuff. So that's what I like most of all. I don't like having to collect documents. I don't like any of that stuff. And what's been pretty awesome is the new systems that we have in place now are making that easier for everybody involved, both from our side and from our seller's side as well, trying to make things as automated as possible, electronic as possible, things you're not having to sit there and fax, you know, 500 pages. And we're trying to get that to where it's a lot easier for everybody.
It's almost like the college admissions process that finally, after hundreds of years, is maybe trying to narrow down a little bit.
Yeah. And just sitting, being in an office for, you know, 8 hours is not, it's not fun. And that's what's cool about this job for us is we do travel a decent amount.
Yeah.
We're talking to people. We can take our business home with us. On the flip side, we can go home and spend time with our families,
right,
if we're not at a closing. And it's awesome.
On your very nice website, I know you've got a great team on there besides yourself with a few of mm-hmm. your sales and support and things like that. And I'm sure they keep you guys out of mischief, out of trouble.
They do.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah, I'm sure. How about you, Jared? What things do you you wake up and say, I got to do that today?
Well, so I think I'm similar to Joel in that, and Justin, we're all kind of, we like interacting with people. I like talking to people.
Yeah.
I like the relationship aspect of it. I've always been, as a leader, at Walgreens, and it's just been something that I've enjoyed. And in going back to the challenges, when you are painting a picture to a buyer on a pharmacy, it does require a lot of details. It requires a lot of reports. It requires a lot, and you have to put it together and then paint that picture and sell that to a buyer. So, I think collecting, it's more of the paperwork, but like Joel mentioned, we do have processes in place. We recognize this. We said, hey, this is something that, we can do it, but we're better at working directly with the buyers and sellers and negotiating and building those relationships. So we've acknowledged that, and we've put processes in place. We've hired a team. We've done a variety of things to make sure it is as easy as possible to both the buyer and the seller when they go through this process. So we have all these things in place. So that's it. Going back to, I know you said traveling, I do enjoy traveling, but sometimes, I've got four kids, Justin's got six kids, and Joel's got four kids.
Good for you
so
guys.
They're all, mine's 13 and younger.
Nice.
So we're of course, want to have that family time. And but on the other side, I do like getting out and working with clients, and we do that quite a bit. So just making sure we have balance there is important.
The listeners may not be able to tell, but I know that I'm older than the three of you, and I can tell by my hair color. I've been talking more about selling as I approach my twilight years and so on. And once in a while, I still get the buying bug. But the same as we talked about the wisdom words to the sellers, what advice would you give to a buyer, wisdom is not necessarily function.
When you look at financials, you need to take a look at take a look at the entire picture. One of the things we see all the time are sellers, because for tax purposes, obviously, where, you'll have your financials that show a salaries and wages at, $80,000.
Yeah.
Well, you and I both know the average pharmacist salary is $120,000 a year in the United States. Okay, so if you look at those salaries and wages, unless it's wrapped up in the compensation of officers or something like that, there are a lot of ways for people to hide what they're paying so that it looks like their books are a lot better. Mm. So really, 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 if you're buying a pharmacy, you need to look at where the raw data, don't just look at financial, look at the raw data, look at what those drug reports say. If those drug reports are saying that you have a 7% gross profitability and your financials say that you have a 10% net profitability, well then what's going on here? Why? Is it because you have heavy rebates on specialty meds from wholesalers and manufacturers? What is that reasoning?
Right. Yeah.
So a buyer, you've got to know what you're looking for and what you're looking at.
Look for a few legs of the stool. Make sure it's all balanced, what you're
absolutely
seeing.
Right.
Absolutely. Make sure you're looking at controlled substances. If your controlled substances are over 20%, there needs to be a pretty good explanation on why.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, if you have controls over 20%, why do you have controls? Are you in an area, a Suboxone clinic? Are you whatever? I mean, is there a reason for
that? And like you said earlier, sometimes it might be all on the up and up, but it's just something that you might not want to deal with as a buyer.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because it paints a picture on your back. It's just what it comes down to.
Yeah.
You have a target on you.
Yeah.
With the DEA, with wholesalers, and but financially – sellers, lie is not the right word. It's not lying. It's because you have your accountants that they paint a financial picture. A lot of times those financials aren't as clear and concise as you and I would like them to be on a buy side. So just make sure that you know what you're looking at when you go out and buy a store.
My dad God rest his soul, but he used to always get really upset with, I'm just going to call her Mrs. A right now, because she would always come in and talk about her marvelous son, who was a doctor. Well, first of all, he was a doctor, but he was a podiatrist, so he wasn't an MD, mm-hmm. as she always seemed to make him out to be. And then my dad would always lean over to me and said, you never hear about the other son that's in prison. Now, I don't know if he was joking or if he really did have one in prison, but people want to talk about their good children, not the prisoners. And so, and they do the same with their books, I'm sure. And like you say, it's not always intentional. It's just what naturally rises to the top.
Yep. But sometimes it is intentional.
Yeah, sometimes
you gotta,
it is.
You gotta, and, yeah. and you know, I, we tell this to people all the time, putting a buyer and a seller together, at some point they've got to trust one another. And if you're a buyer and you don't trust your seller, don't buy the pharmacy.
Right.
If there's not a semblance of trust there that you guys are both working in good faith, I would highly encourage you to really think twice before you do something.
Yeah, right.
Because sometimes that feeling is right, you know.
That feeling is right a lot of times.
It is. And so just, you know, just know what you're looking at. And if you have – we do buyer consulting. So I encourage you, if you have a question, if you don't know what you're looking at, call us. And we'll be happy to help you through that process.
Is it ever like real estate where both buyer and seller kind of have like a helper? Or are you guys usually kind of representing the deal?
We have one right now that's happening. I mean, you do. You do have it at some level. But it's not typically.
Not typical.
It's not typical. No.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice would you guys give someone listening to this now who has some questions, at least? I'm assuming they could reach out to you and that'd be the first step.
Absolutely. So I would say, we have our website, www.triavohealth.com. All of our information is there, and we are there to answer those questions. And whether they're thinking of selling or buying, we're also on LinkedIn. Triavo Health's on LinkedIn, and we're all on LinkedIn as well. And so I would really recommend that they reach out to us and we can answer those questions as they come up. So whether they're, like I said, buying or selling, we're there for both.
I imagine you'd welcome somebody who wants to sell in a month or in 10 years, someone to connect with.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah, I've had somebody who wanted to sell in 10 years that ended up selling in a month and a half. So it happens.
Let's say that each of you have to take a year sabbatical and you can't do anything with the business and you can't improve your business life. What are each of you doing for a year?
I'm rebuilding old cars.
You are, Justin?
That's what I'm going to do, yeah, if I'm taking a year off.
Do you have them already?
I do. I've got an old truck. My first car is a 53 Chevy pickup. I'm working on that right now.
I know there's three levels. There's someone that wants to – they don't care what's inside. They want it to be the best car, so it's all new inside. Then there's some that need to be like exactly perfect. Then there's some that put a bunch of old crap on it just because it looks cool.
I'm kind of trying to go quasi-original but make it run good. So if my kids drive it, they're not going to end up killing themselves.
So you could put new brakes in?
Yeah. I put – new disc brakes and that. Yeah, absolutely. Make sure the engine's running good. Going to try to keep it original, but not be crazy about it. I'm not going to care about the type of bolt that you put in. Make sure it matches exactly what stock.
Yeah, we used to always learn to put a pencil or something in the butterfly thing of the carburetor or something. They don't do that anymore, do they?
No.
That's old school.
Yeah. I mean, on my truck, you
could. That's cool. How about you guys?
Yeah. You know, I think if I was going to take a year off, I would probably travel, just do some traveling. And I don't know if I have. I don't really work on cars, but travel and maybe do some remodeling on the house. I like to, you know, do different projects around the house. So I think probably those two things.
I was talking to a friend years ago. We both did very minor remodeling of our basements. We both had like rec rooms in the basement. And I told him how much I enjoyed that. And he said, it's probably because, you know, pharmacy you go to and it looks the same every day. You go in the morning, you help people, you leave, it looks exactly the same. And it's neat kind of in life sometimes to have something that you can actually show progress on and not reverse progress like with the DIR fees and things like that.
Right.
How about you, Joel?
You know what? I play music a lot. I play guitar. I would probably do that. But I'll be honest with you. I think I would go insane. I think it would be tough for me to take a year off.
Yeah, right. Well, hey, you guys, it's really fun meeting you.
You too, Mike.
Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure meeting you as well.
Thank you. I hope the listeners will realize that even though they might be going through a lot of emotions selling or buying, that there's real humans out there to help them and that have been through it before. And I hope that they've enjoyed, you know, listening to us talk as much as I've enjoyed talking to you.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity. Yep.
All right, you guys. I look forward to being in touch and continued best wishes to you.
Thank you, Mike. To you as well.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care. You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.